Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host today. Our special guest is Nancy Rossman, entrepreneur and self-author of First Love, Last Dance. If you'd like to ask Nancy a question, feel free to give us a call at 347-324-3460. Again, that's 347-324-3460. Or you can pose a question in the chat room or Twitter us on hashtag Apple Capital. And before we begin, I'm going to play a short clip of from CNBC about the book. So hold on 1 second, and I'll go ahead and play it.
To my mother, without touching, staring worshipfully at her, rather than looking at the person taking the picture.
Nancy Rossman wrote First Love, Last Dance as a gift to her mother. The man staring worshipfully at her mother is not her father.
She told me once that she returned all of Peter's pictures and other memorabilia when she broke up with them.
We first introduced you to Peter and Elise Eve 1 year ago, almost 92-year-old lovebirds who married each other in their 70s. The two first fell in love more than 70 years ago, but because Elise's mother disapproved, they wound up with other people. When their spouses died, they found each other again, and the story of their reconnection became Rossman's book. Our story aired, then it was on CNN, and the little book that was a gift caught fire.
Once it hit CNN, I got a phone call from a producer, movie producer.
Then came the sales.
I pretty much consistently stayed in the top 10% of all books for sale on Amazon, which just thrills me. I didn't expect it.
TV exposure helped, but Rossman credits Peter and Elise with the real success.
I don't know that the book would have had the impact at all without the interview of them and how well they came across, how natural and open they were and sweet, loving to each other.
They were charming and funny.
We have good health. We're very fortunate that way.
Don't have a walker yet.
They still are.
I mean, do you still have sex?
Yes.
That surprises our doctor every time we get on the physical.
Mom pours me another glass of iced tea.
And the slim book, meant as a heartfelt gesture, is touching hearts across the country.
I think that what is resonating with them is a message about hope and second chances.
In Sandy Springs, Jay Watson, 11 Alive News.
Well, Nancy, welcome to the program. I'm sorry. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tim.
Sorry about that audio issue there. I guess to begin with, tell us about yourself and kind of segue into how did you write this book?
Okay. I grew up on a big farm in Ohio in the 50s, if you will. And, you know, things were different then. We didn't have a TV till I think I was 8 years old, something like that. And So books were really the thing. Getting them from the library, being read to by our parents, my grandparents. So books were just always in my life. Not that I thought about being a writer at any point. I really didn't. I was a teacher right out of college, and I did that for 5 years, and I'm glad I did, but I think I got into it thinking this looks easy and fun, and I didn't find that to be necessarily the case.
There's some work.
It's
hot, so it's some work.
And I'm glad I did it. And then I got into business, and I was with Xerox in sales in the early 70s, and then moved into commercial real estate brokerage, which I did for 29 years. Mm-hmm. And about 11 years ago, right when I turned 55, I started thinking about something else I would like to do. You know, what would that be? Something not business oriented, something purely for pleasure. And my best friend, she's been my best friend for 45 years, she sat down with me, and she's quite spiritual and always thinking out of the box. And she said, you know, you've been a reader your whole life. You have a lot of interesting stories. You've used storytelling in teaching and in business, in lots of situations, and I think you're good at it, and I think you ought to really investigate that and get more into the specifics and maybe write a book. So I started in 1999 going to a writer's conference in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And I thought, because I had read so much and I'd been to college, and you just think, well, how hard could it be? Sometimes you read these books and you just think, wow, I could do better than this, or at least I have. And I found out, boy, this is hard stuff too. There's a lot more to writing it than there is actually telling a story orally. So I stayed with it. I really liked the getting behind the scene, if you will, and getting into the specifics of what makes a story good, whether it's a true story or whether it's fiction. The elements are the same. You have the same problems that you need to consider. And so I met, I continued for about 6 years, every summer going to one of these boot camp type writing conferences and getting better and better and still writing during the year. I entered a couple of contests here and there, and I won outright. Won one of the contests. Was a fiction piece, well, a short story, and read more about writing, and you know, got very diligent about working on it every day for a little bit. And in 2005, Dorothy Allison is a very good writer and wonderful teacher, and I studied with her twice, and we took a liking to each other, and she really more or less has mentored me from that point in 2005, because she sat down with me and said that she thought it was time for me to tackle a book. And then she's very blunt, but in a nice way. And she said, you know, I think I need to tell you that your fiction pieces really aren't that good. And going, oh, my heart. And she was smiling. She said, but I have good news. I think that the pieces that you write, the things that you write about that have happened to you in your life, are really wonderful, and I think that you should stick with that. I think you should, certainly your first book should be something, a true story. And so let's think about what you've got. And I said, well, I taught school for 5 years. I could write about that. And she goes, ugh, you know, children, I don't know. They're so overrated. And she said, and it's been done. You know, let's think of something else. And I said, well, how about business? At that point in time, I'd been in business 25 years. I could write about my business experiences. She said, well, honey, you know, business, you can make a lot of money, but it's boring. There must, come on, think of something else. And I said, well, hey, Dorsey, you know, I've had three husbands. I could write about that. She goes, ah, men, don't get me started. And I said, well, shoot, all right, well, listen, there is this story, true story, about my mother, Elise. She fell in love for the first time when she was 19 with Peter. And she became engaged to him at 21, but she didn't marry him not till she was 75. And Dorothy sat right down the chair and pulled up close to me and she went, I like it. Tell me more. And I said, well, I can tell you more. And she goes, you know, that must have been hard for you. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, Peter wasn't your father, right? And I said, no, Peter wasn't my father. She said, well, it must be hard to know that your mother's first love wasn't your dad. And I said, you know, Dorothy, it really wasn't. From the time I remember, my mother grew up in Atlanta, very Southern privileged upbringing. She marries my dad, a Yankee. We moved to Ohio, you know, after the war. I mean, they moved to Ohio, and then I came along later. And my dad had always wanted to be a farmer. Even though he had a college degree and so on, that was what he loved, animals, and he had a thing. It was kind of his dream to have a big farm. And in those days, you could still make that happen if you knew something about it. So anyway, on the farm, there we are on the farm, and when I was about 10 years old, through their mutual friends, Peter got my mother's phone number from their mutual friends in Atlanta, and he called on her birthday. And my dad thought this was hilarious. He thought it was very funny. And, of course, in the 50s, you didn't talk long distance for any great period of time. You talked maybe 1 minute. And he had just, Peter just called to say hello and to wish her happy birthday. And, you know, I hope you have a nice birthday. So, didn't think anything about it. But the next year, and the next, and the next, every year he called on her birthday. And my dad would come in from the field of the barn, you know, on her birthday, and he'd sit down at the table early, and he'd start glancing up at the clock, and he'd go, hey, Elise, it's 6:00. I don't think the guy's calling this year. And, you know, teasing her and everything. And she'd get all flustered and everything. And then the phone would ring, and he'd go, that's got to be him. Okay, kids, let's listen to your mother talk to her old boyfriend. And so, you know, so we're just sitting around listening to her. And I was the oldest child, and I was very curious about this guy. You know, I didn't think that nothing illicit ever happened. There were just these phone calls every year. But I was curious, what this guy look like, you know, compared to my dad? And why did he keep calling? What did he want? And I would ask these questions, and my mother would go, oh, you know, it's the Southern way. You never forget a friend. And she'd never tell me anything, and I was always rooting around in her stuff because I was sure there must be a picture of him, there must be a letter, there must be something. There was nothing, ever. And finally, on her 40th birthday, that was the last time he called. So I knew all about this guy, but I didn't meet him until they were both 75 and they had outlived their respective spouses and so on. And there was an opportunity for them to get together again. And the spark was still there. I'll say the spark was still there. And so that's when I met him a few days before their wedding.
Wow.
And they really were like teenagers again. The interview I think the book had been out 2 or 3 months, and I had a website, and I was doing all my own promotion because the agents, I queried over 70 agents in New York when the book was finished, and it took 5 years to write. And mostly they said the same thing. Six of them actually did read the whole book, and they said, you know, Nancy, it's sweet, it's intriguing, but you're not famous, your mother's not famous, there's no illicit sex, there's no controversial subject matter, and it has a happy ending. Oh my God, it'll never sell.
It's classic.
So, you know, and my husband said, well, you know, and I was just going to bag it, and my husband said, you spent 5 years working on this, go ahead, just self-publish it, get it on Amazon, set up a website, start doing readings, and I did, but very early on, like in the third month that the book was out, I got lucky, because I learned from my PR guy how to approach producers and radio people and so on, and newspaper people, how to, you know, get their attention. And so I called, got the name of a producer who happened to be a woman at the NBC station in Atlanta, and I just left her a voicemail saying, I've got the best Valentine story in the whole world, and the couple lives in Sandy Springs, which is North Atlanta, and you could do an interview, so on and so forth, and she bit. And
wow.
So the interview is so funny. It's on my website, First Love Last Dance website. And, I mean, they said, you played the clip, so, you know, some of the funny stuff they said in the interview, I thought, oh, man, they can't put this on TV, can they?
They will.
And the producer said, no, this is, it's sweet, it's funny, it's, you know, because you expect old people to be, I think, certainly I did, 90-year-olds to be kind of staid and very conservative, and, you know, they giggled through the interview and they're holding hands all the time, and I thought that holding hand thing would be over, Tim, you know, within the first couple of years, but they always were holding hands. And
now, I guess it's
when you're 40s and 50s. then after your 60s, you really don't care anymore.
I think so. We had NBC in various cities. I didn't know this. The TV stations tend to work mm-hmm. within their own family. So if you're on an NBC station in one city, then you got a very good chance that others in other cities will pick it up. And so that happened. And then CNN picked up the story and ran it nationally. They aired it three times on Valentine's Day in 2010. And so for that whole year, 2010, because it just kept popping up here and there, and I was doing readings like mad, two or three a week.
Wow.
And so lots of travel, and, you know, my husband said, I think when I was up to like 85 readings or something, my husband said, so how's it going? And I said, you know, I got a real empathy for Neil Diamond now. He said, what do you mean? I said, how many thousands of times do you think he has sung Sweet Caroline, you know?
Why?
So, but it really worked. It really took off, and it for a while. Every time Pete and Elise went out, you know, to a restaurant in the Atlanta area, or they went shopping at Brunner Mall or whatever, somebody would recognize them, and because they look very, you know, they both have a very distinct look. My mother's redhead. I mean, not really. She still dyes her hair red, but, you know, she's got red hair, and he has hair. Real thick white hair. And so somebody would recognize him, and ask about, you know, how they were doing, and sometimes they got asked for their autograph. I mean, nobody ever asked me, but it was really fun for me to watch all that attention that they got, and I think they came. I did 4 or 5 readings at bookstores and clubs and various places in Atlanta, and they came with me to all of them, and a lot of the people who would be at the reading would then want not just me to sign a book, but they'd ask for them to sign as well. So it was a kick. It was one of those, you know, kind of priceless moments.
Wow. That's really amazing. And is that it's really
only 176 pages, so it's really easy to read.
Yeah, it's a quick, intense kind of, it covers about 50 years worth of actual timetable, and the story takes place about half in Ohio and half in Atlanta area. And so I got a lot of press in those two, you know, in those two states, if you will. And but I do think that it came at a point in time when it came out, the economy was in the tank. I mean, things were bad for a lot of people, and this was kind of just a sweet, uplifting story. And I have talked to two different producers, television producers, not cinema, and it would make, I think, a good kind of short film for like HBO or Lifetime, and we haven't put anything together yet, and one of the producers told me that the curve or timeline for sweet kind of pure stories like this one, she said it comes around every 5 to 7 years, and she told me, she said, Nancy, you missed the cycle by about a year. but it'll come back again, and so I actually, she said, I'm just going to say no for now, but not no forever. So that would be cool too. I would love to see what they would do with it. Be kind of fun.
Well, I'm going to play this.
The clip from Atlanta from CNBC real quick, and then we'll talk about
how you promote your book
and talk about really couples in general.
So
give me a second, and let me go and play the clip.
Okay.
Well, you know the saying, it's never too late? Well, it's never been more true than in our next story. Ahead of Valentine's weekend comes a story about how the power of love carried one couple through a 71-year love affair. New tonight, Tuesday Watson.
The first Friday of the month, dance night at the Roswell Recreation Center for the 50 and over crowd. One might assume many of these couples have spent a lifetime dancing together, but it took Elise and Peter Eves 71 years to get here.
I was leaning over the piano watching somebody play when he walked up.
It was 1938 when Elise and Peter first met.
I thought he was cute.
She's a beauty, and we just fit together when we dance so well.
He was very persistent. He was to ask me out, and then he just put the pressure on.
They fell in love and got engaged. Then Peter was drafted in 1941. While he was gone, Elise's mother pressured her.
My mother did not like him. She kept telling me that he would not make me happy. He would not be a good husband.
She broke the engagement.
Back then, you thought your mother knew best.
Well, it felt like a knife had been stuck in my heart, of course.
Peter returned from the war. He and Elise lived separate yet parallel lives, finding love with other people, marrying and having children. The years flew by, but their love for each other remained.
Elise was always in the back of my mind.
I still carried the love for him. I think you can love more than one man.
Peter's wife died.
So I called in to offer my condolences. And 9 months later, my husband died.
How long did you wait after her husband died before you contacted her?
About 15 minutes after I heard the news.
57 years later, a second chance.
Picked up where we left off. It was like we hadn't been apart all those years.
We felt like teenagers again, really.
Really?
Peter proposed again with the same ring. He kept it all those years.
Well, it's very important. It makes a story complete, doesn't it?
They married at 75. At 90, they are celebrating their 15th anniversary this month.
And how's your health?
Good. We have good health. We're very fortunate that way.
Don't have a walker yet.
As for romance...
You mean, do you still have sex?
Yes.
That surprises our doctor every time we get on the physical.
But the rhythm of daily life, often taken for granted, isn't when you've had to wait a lifetime to get it. Theirs is a love affair delayed more than half a century, but that love prevailed, allowing Peter and Elise to save the last dance for each other.
The best years of our life have been the ones we spent together, I think.
In Dunwoody, Jay Watson, 11 Alive News.
Oh my goodness, that is the sweetest story.
Well, that was the clip from Atlanta. Give me a second. Get an echo real quick. Are you hearing the echo on your line? Nancy, you there?
Yes. Yes.
Are you getting the echo on your line?
I was, but I'm not now.
Nancy, you there?
I am.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I just think the line went dead. Oh, I was asking, did you hear me when I was talking earlier?
Just you said, is there an echo on the line? That's the last thing I heard.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I think I'll block it out or re-edit. So I was talking about why do you think couples today don't have these type of love stories? Are they looking for something more or something better, or is too many distractions in life? Why you don't think that the simplicity of this love story don't really prevail today as common as theirs in society?
Right. I don't know. I heard from a psychologist in California who's done a lot of research with these kind of getting back together type love stories, and she says that her research shows that if you really fall deeply in love with somebody, now this is for a man or a woman, between the ages of 17 and 19, there is something that goes on with your brain and and your feelings that is never quite replicated again. And she tried to explain to me why that is. And so, you know, you'll hear, I actually have heard other stories from younger people, though this appeals, I would say, this particular book appeals to primarily women over 55 years old. Mm-hmm. But in readings or in book clubs or whatever, I have had many people, still mainly women, who are in their late 30s, early 40s, and they still remember that first guy. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know how valid the psychologist's stats are from California, because I haven't had that many young men in any of my readings. But there is definitely something, some truth to, you know, this very first time, this very first love, and we just don't have maybe the mechanism to hear about it. I'm not sure, but I do think that, you know, you touched on one thing, Tim, is that nowadays I think people expect so much from this one person, and the marriage, and it's probably unrealistic, and there's so many distractions that, you know, the time that you give it to work probably isn't like it used to be. You know, divorce wasn't as prevalent, if any. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't. None of my friends, nobody was divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it's very different. And I think the best thing about young people today, generally speaking, they're waiting longer to get married, and I think personally that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm just noticing that, for example, when I was teaching middle school and high school, that this particular couple, even though they, you know, they might go back and forth, but pretty much the couples are pretty solid in high school, and if they decide to get married afterwards, those are the ones that will last the longest. It's kind of amazing, because even looking at 20 years when I, well, well past 20 years when I started teaching in 89, and look through the time when I started in 89 and to today's date, and almost 20 years, well, over 20 years later, that those couples, way more than half, probably 60 or 65%, who started in high school are still together. You know, they have the ups and downs and so forth, but it's pretty, pretty solid. And I guess it's just that distraction, the longer they wait, they see more opportunities, and then it gets to a certain point and say, hey, I'm hardwired. So I'm hardwired, either hardwired myself in high school, and this is the beginning of the person, or I'm going to hardwire myself a society, and this is what I'm going to be, and you just have to take it. So I guess it's both ways. When you went and wrote your book, how did you go out there and choose a publicist, when you send your manuscripts to a company for them to take a look at it, what steps did you take to try to promote your book? Did you have a team of people, or how did that really work?
Well, first of all, it's pretty easy to find vanity publishers, and those are people that will help you for a price self-publish. And nowadays, you don't really need to invest a lot of money, because everybody does print on demand. They have these elaborate machines where, you know, they can do a whole, they can print a book. Once the software is in there, they can print a book in like a minute, and with a hardcover and everything. And so you didn't, anymore, you wouldn't ever go to a publisher and print, you know, $5,000 or $10,000. You just wouldn't do that. For a few thousand dollars, you could go to, and you can Google them and then check out how long they've been around. If I had it to do all over again, I probably would have I probably wouldn't have picked Ex Libris. They have been around for a long time there in Indiana. And mm-hmm. I got a very good product, and I got a distribution channel through them that, you mm-hmm. know, they set up for me for like $3,000, something like that. Wow. And then, but if I had it to do again, I would probably pick CreateSpace, which is an Amazon company, and then you have that whole Amazon power behind you, which Amazon has been just fabulous to work with, and they have really, Amazon and Kindle, the whole Kindle process and putting your book out in e-format and with all the help they give you, I mean, you can do that for, if you didn't want to print, if you just wanted to go through CreateSpace and have your book in EPUB format compatible with the Kindle device, you can do that for, you know, $100.
Wow.
And the e-publishing is really, I think it was 2 years ago, this coming July, 2 years back, the Wall Street Journal said e-publishing for the first time had outsold, so we're talking downloads, you know, not as in profitability necessarily, but in the number of books sold in that format outdid print. And that was not quite 2 years ago. And, you know, that's not going to go backwards, I don't think. And so anybody today who's trying to get started, you do need a good editor. I don't care how good a writer you are. Every famous author you can think of has always had a good editor, which just helps give you distance from your own work and see where the holes are because you're too close to mm-hmm. it. So I hired somebody to help me do that. That was a couple of $1,000s. And so when I had finished the manuscript, you know, it was about another 10 months for working with an editor one-on-one to fix it. And then I did, as I said. As far as promotion, then you also have Google AdWords and Facebook. I have over 3,000 First Love, Last Dance Facebook fans, and I post there twice a day, every day, and I have for a long time. And I'm not talking about the book there. I'm just talking about things. I'm talking about life, being a woman, mm-hmm. being in love, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then initially, for the first year and a half, I had to get all my own gigs, readings. And mm-hmm. other than Barnes and Noble and the more national chains, you know, you can't get in those kind of outfits. But you can go to libraries, you can go to clubs, you can go to retirement centers, you can go to, you know, Kiwanis and the Masons and all those kind of service groups and mm-hmm. be entertainment. And you can do it, you know, a lot of different ways. You can talk about how you wrote the book. You can just talk about the book. You can kind of give some help to encourage other people to do so. And that's what I did. So
even with the chains today, I mean, they're dying off. Look like it's more independence is still out there. I'm sure those will be pretty easy. But dealing with chains themselves is not really... I don't see book signings on a regular basis. Maybe I see like once a month or maybe twice a month or every other month. Any particular reason why they say it's real difficult to try to get into the Barnes and Nobles type bookstores?
Yeah, the national chains say that their dedication, their allegiance is to the mainstream publishers. And okay. that self-published people are coming in kind of back door, and so that's why they won't allow it. But if you look at the independent bookstores in every major city, I mean, in Atlanta, I did three of them. they take a completely different tact, and the independent bookstores tend to have a reading almost every day.
Yeah.
And so it is easier to get into the independent bookstores if they think the book is interesting in some way. And so I never mm-hmm. was refused in any of the independent bookstores in any city.
Mm-hmm.
But, as I said, the national chains, except for Borders in Medina, Ohio, where a lot of the story takes place, Borders did let me in there. Barnes & Noble has a strict policy. They're even, you know, they're worse than Borders, and it's almost a waste of time. I just found it much easier to find readings elsewhere.
And what about Half Price Books? Is that an option?
Half Price Books? You know what I found? it's kind of the same thing. This is kind of a sidebar, but after my second or third reading, I decided, because my book sells for, in paperback on Amazon, sells for $17.95. On the hardcover, it's ridiculous. It's $29 or something. So when I would do readings, I always said my book was for sale for $15, but you got a second one free. And the idea was, I want you to have one book, and then I want you to think of somebody, and I'll sign it to that person, that you think would also enjoy the story. So
wow.
It's kind of like a half price book. And somebody said, well, can't I just have one book for $7.50? And I'm going, you know, there's one in every crowd. And the guy.
There are.
And I said, no, you're missing the point here. I want you to share the story. I need exposure. And that's mm-hmm. what I really had to learn, you know, kind of the hard way. You don't, when you're doing the readings, yeah, it's nice to sell the books, but you're, The bookstore people always told me, you'll never sell more than 10% of the crowd unless you're a name author. So 100 people come, you're only going to sell 10 books, right? But I found ways to, like, just like we're saying, you know, I found ways to ante up, because it really is true. You just need to get the word out. If you gave the books away, versus selling 10 books, it would be better to give away 100 books than to get the $100 for, you know, selling the books.
Yeah, it's disclosure.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, that's all right. It happens to me all the time. So and what advice do you give if a person who's out there want to write a book, and then close with last words that you want to share about your story in your book?
I think that everybody, I've done 112 readings now in 7 states over the last 2 years, and this is what I have learned. Everybody has one great story that they could write, at least one.
Wow.
And I think how you get started, you get a couple of good books on writing. Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, Abigail Thomas on writing, those are two good ones. Stephen King's book on writing,
mm-hmm.
Also good. And then I think, so you want to write, but you don't know where to start. So start with a journal and write 2 pages every day for 30 days. No fear going back to look at your work until the month is over. And then go back and read your journal, read what you've written for the past 30 days, and you'll have an idea where to start.
Wow, that's awesome. Really appreciate all that great advice. I mean, thank you for coming on to the program. You've given us a wealth of information. And again, how can they get your book again? First Love, Last Dance?
First Love, Last Dance is the name of the book. And Amazon is the best place to get it, because you can get it in e-format, paperback, or hardcover.
Okay. Amazon, the best place to get it. And if they want to contact you, you have a website?
Yes, firstlovelastdance.com.
Great. Nancy, thank you for coming on to the program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. Best of luck to you, too.
Same here. Take care. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. This has been another episode of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Again, that was Nancy Rossman, author and entrepreneur. Last Love, Me First Love, Last Dance. You can download the episode on iTunes, or you can get it from Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening to the program today, and have a great week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.